Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
There, see what I did?
Look at you.
I got on and on my phone since you don't let me have my laptop anymore.
Yeah.
Meanie. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And I'm the meanie named Hino. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in tonight. We're really actually happy that you're listening to the show. This show is for all you performers and songwriters.
We're
actually kind of happy about it.
It doesn't sound like it, but we're really actually happy that you're here.
Yeah, we pretty much
What's
are.
The show for,
I don't know. This show is for all you songwriters out there, musicians, performers, anybody trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know anything. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are, but we are able to find brilliant people, talented people, and bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and give you the opportunity to join in as well.
True. Tonight we found brilliant and talented, which is awesome. So you're going to want to definitely go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can chime in with your questions and comments there. You can also hit us up on Twitter at The Music Row Show.
That's right. And I know you're probably sick of hearing us talking about this, but we're not. We're so excited. We're on Dish TV now. You can see us all over the country on Channel 73.
That's true.
Four times a week, right?
Four times a week on Channel 73, Dish, and various other cable networks around the country. But Dish is the big one.
That's right.
So check that out.
Blue Highways TV.
You know what? We got a fun show tonight. First up, we got our old pal, hit songwriter and road warrior, Gary Hannon. He's in town for a visit.
That's right. And then songwriter and recording artist, Alyssa Bonagura will be live in Bonagura.
Yeah.
I think is how she says it. We'll be live in studio in hour two.
That's going to be awesome. So, Scott, why don't you tell our listeners all about this? This gentleman right here.
Okay, look.
And I use that term loosely.
I know. We love having this guy in whenever he's in town. Not only is he a multi-platinum selling hit songwriter with songs like Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off and Back When I Knew It All, not only is he traveling across the country raising money and awareness to the issues faced by soldiers coming back from the front lines with his Road Warrior tour and songs from the battlefield, not only. Has he worked with some of the most dangerous jobs a guy can work prior to becoming a hit writer?
Yeah.
But he is really the first hit writer that ever bought Hino and me many, many drinks at Dan McGinnis and talked songwriting with us like we were right where he was at the time creatively I've always really appreciated him for that. And as an added bonus, he brought along his friend Jeff Prince, known throughout the Facebook land, or used to be, as T.C. McPappy, who has, for my money, the coolest songwriting success story of 2015.
Heck yeah.
So buckle in. It's always fun having Gary here. It's a pleasure to say, Gary Hannon, welcome to the Music Row Show. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very nice.
Well, it's good to be back here, guys. It really is. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been forever. Yeah. 2013 was the last time you were here.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's only, 2 years ago?
Yeah. So you made the big escape to Florida a few years back. Which is what we were just talking about. Yet you still manage a songwriting career, which is awesome. Do you think that would have been possible had you not spent years here first? I mean, in order to have a career, do you have to be here at least for part of it?
You know, I think that's kind of changed. I think, you know, with the capability that you have now with being able to write a song on your cell phone and the lyrics and send it as a message to Nashville in under 5 seconds, I think, I think it's, you know, that's, I do a lot of my writing by myself. So for me, it's very simple for me to sit on my boat. That's where I live now, is on a boat.
Nice.
Right in the middle
Rub
of the
Everglades.
Yep. So, you know, I can sit out there, I can write a song, and I can send it to a publisher, immediately.
But you would agree that you, had you not been here for the years you were here making the connections and laying the groundwork, someone who's just in the Florida Everglades and has never been here may not have the accessibility that you've earned.
You know, I'm not sure that that's entirely accurate. The old days of knowing a lot of the producers and that for me are gone. I never really was tied into a lot of producers in this town. I knew a lot of writers, I knew a lot of publishers, but it's always been about writing a song that's captivating, that is interesting, that has an unusual title, that has simplistic yet profound lyrical content, mm-hmm. And you know, send it over to Nashville and let it fight its way to the top. You know.
All right. So. Well, how do you think living in the Everglades, stepping out of the day to day music row focus, has that affected your songwriting at all?
No, because to be quite frank and honest with you guys, I don't really write for the commercial market anymore.
Okay.
I'm doing what I want to do now, and that's, you know, write these songs from the battlefield, where I take my motorcycle to different Civil War battlefields, different memorials around the country, camp along the way, and I write my songs on the actual battlefield. I see whatever inspiration comes to me. This project that I'm doing, the songs from the battlefield, will be sold at certain shows, and then 100% of the money I generate goes to a veteran that's deemed most in need, mm-hmm. by one of the veterans' organizations. So
in that local area,
yeah, I do shows in different areas, and then they're always free. None of the performers get paid anything. All the money that's raised goes to a specific veteran.
Okay.
Or, you know, like either we'll pay his rent for a year, or we had the case of one gentleman who was on oxygen. He was in a wheelchair and he wasn't doing well, but one of his final wishes was to be flown back to Vietnam so that he could find closure before he passed on.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I did a show with the intention of paying for this gentleman's air ticket, which is about $4,500 because of you know, the wheelchair and everything else, mm-hmm. that he had to take with him. But before I even got up on stage, somebody had paid for this gentleman's fare.
Wow.
And so we were able to, you know, get another veteran and you know give him the proceeds of that show.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So what, now that you're down in Florida, what is the music scene like in that part of the country? Places to play out? I mean, do you do regular shows or what?
The last couple of years, I've done shows, you know, similar to the Bluebird Round.
Yep.
And I've had my friends, like Daryl Worley, come in, and Richie, yep. McDonald from Lone Star, Billy Dean, you know, a variety of artist friends of mine come down, the guys from the Little River Band. And we just tell the stories behind our songs and we play them, you know, acoustically. So
sweet.
Yeah.
But there's lots of places to play there. Is it more or less like here where you got a lot of opportunity to play out, or
there are places to play. It is difficult to find a place during the tourist season, because all these places are filled to maximum capacity anyway.
Right. Right, yeah. And they're all partying and spring breaking and things like that. Yeah.
They don't need you.
Breaking the audience into listening was difficult, and you know, there's a lot of tricks to where you can make that happen without getting physical with them.
Oh, well, this we need to hear. What are some of the tricks?
You know, we'll probably save that for a rainy day.
I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
It's raining outside right now, so.
No, but it's nighttime. Right?
Oh, okay. Tease.
Yeah, but you know I have such a loyal following in my area that, you know, they've kind of educated themselves, and they hush themselves now. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, yeah.
Interesting. Oh, owe me a Coke. Come on.
Okay, so let's talk more about the Road Warrior Tour. How did it start, and how do you go about planning where you're going and all of that?
Well, you know, I'm right in the preliminary stages of that, and it has been difficult because there's just not a lot of Civil War battlefields in the Florida area.
Yeah.
So, you know, where I live down, sure. in the Keys. So, I bought myself a BMW motorcycle. It's an off-road motorcycle. Mm-hmm. It's called a GSA 1200. And I just completed a 2,500-mile journey where I went to Vicksburg, and I came, you know, eventually came up the Trace, and then went back through Chickamauga, the Battle of Chickamauga site. And then from there I went to a couple of other places along the way. Trying to think of that prisoner of war camp that they had.
Andersonville.
Andersonville, yeah. I spent a couple of hours there, and you know, wrote some stuff,
mm-hmm.
And then you know, I don't try and write the whole song in its entirety. I just sit there and I try and draw from whatever comes to me, mm-hmm. and then work on it a little bit. Then when I'm in Nashville, I get with my old buddy John Wiggins, okay. and we finish these songs up. You know?
Do you try to get ideas from different headstones and that kind of thing? Or
yeah, I don't want to make it too morbid, but not necessarily that.
Okay.
Just whatever comes to mind.
Okay.
You know, I don't try and write about a specific headstone or a monument, but I just try and follow my own thought process. You know, whatever comes to me at that particular moment.
All right.
So, what was the thought process for you that actually started this?
Well, there's a couple of things that I'm very passionate about, and one of them obviously is helping veterans out. The other thing is songwriting, and the third thing is riding motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought to myself, I can do everything I want. I can still help veterans out. I can still ride motorcycles,
mm-hmm.
and I can still write my songs.
That's so pretty awesome. Yeah,
you know that was the thought process.
Well, that brings us actually to the really important stuff, the meat of this, Harley versus BMW. I mean, that's, you used to have a Harley, now you have a BMW, or do you still have the Harley? I don't know.
No, just the BMW. But for me, a couple of years ago, I went around the entire United States on my Harley Davidson.
Yeah,
and I love riding that bike, but I got halfway around the Grand Canyon, and it turned the road turned to gravel, and I thought to myself, man, there's just no way I can get to where I want to go, and that's exactly where I want to go. But that road leads to the top of that mountain over there, where the sunset's going to be the prettiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so I was unable to do that. So as a result, I decided to buy this GSA BMW motorcycle, which I can cruise on and I can get off road and do the dirty work too.
Aha!
So.
All right. Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, then, seriously,
are they bigger tires? I mean, I don't.
It's just a different. I mean, Harleys are not built for riding off road. I mean, you get stuck pretty quick. They're heavy.
Wondering so the difference in an off road is. I know we're going way off.
Yeah.
Well, off the reservation here, since we're a songwriter show, but is it just a lighter bike or bigger tread on the wheels, or
it's just different? It's a higher suspension.
Yeah, it's like the difference between a Jeep and a Camry. I mean, you're not going to take a Camry off-roading, but you could take a Jeep off-roading.
Well, it's kind of funny because my BMW is a lot more expensive than my Harley.
Yeah, I bet. So how much of the money that you raise in doing the different shows that you do, how much of that goes towards the actual cause? And
100%.
100%?
100% goes
to the
cause. In fact, we don't even get to count the money.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, we'll get up on stage. We'll have a series of gunny sacks that are passed around the audience, and then every couple of songs, I'll have a little talk to the audience and say, mm-hmm. you know, I want you to meet this veteran. He's going to come up on stage. He's going to talk to you guys, and you can find it within your hearts to give to him after you've heard him talk and meet the gentleman himself. So, you know, it's and then at the end of the evening, he gets everything that's in there.
Wow. Yeah. That keeps it honest. You don't even.
I'm not a charity, so I'm not legally able to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're just. I see. Brilliant.
The conduit. Right. Yeah.
You're the conduit. All right. Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get a song out of Gary. We're going to talk more about Road Warrior and find out how people can get involved and if there's any people that are sponsors that want to do something. We're going to learn all about that when we come back on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
She said, I'm going out with my girlfriends for margaritas at the Holiday Inn. Oh, have mercy, my only thought was tequila makes her clothes fall off.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
I told her, put an extra.
We're here with hit songwriter Gary Hannon, and that's, of course, his big hit, Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off. Big hit for Joe Nichols. And we've been tuning guitars and getting getting ready and giving him a pep talk so we can do us a song here in just a second.
Absolutely. Before the break, we were talking about the fact that with these things you're doing for specific veterans around the country, it's going directly to them. How can people get involved? If, you know, if there's someone listening that says, man, I'd like to sponsor these tours for Gary, how does one go about doing that?
There's a website. It's roadwarriortour.com, mm-hmm. www.roadwarriortour.com, where I'll be blogging from the road, wherever I'm at, I'll be blogging on a regular basis and letting people know where the next show is going to be and who's going to participate in the show.
Sweet.
All the information is on that website.
RoadWarriorTour.com.
Great.
Excellent.
So what kind of, I understand you do a little bit of something to kind of try to keep things going after you leave town. So that, you know.
Right, yeah. I make the venues make a commitment to me that they'll put on two shows annually with 100% of the proceedings going to a local veteran in need from their local community.
Okay.
That's one of the prerequisites for me to even doing a show at their venue, you know, because really they're the only people that are making money outside of
the
veteran themselves. So.
That makes sense.
Well, you got this guitar here. We've tuned it down. What are you thinking about playing for us? And
well, you know what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to try a couple of songs. I'll try one that's brand new. It's so new that it hasn't been demoed yet.
Perfect.
So, sweet.
And you know, it's I'm not a singer. I'm a songwriter. So for me, getting the message across is far more important than trying to, you know, be some vocal performer. So in these songs that I'm writing, songs from the battlefield, I try and get the audience to listen to the words and have some kind of an impact on them. So, I'll play your song.
I like that intro. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, this is so new. I know I'm going to probably mess it up in a couple of places. We'll just go on through.
Well, don't mess it up. This could be your demo.
This morning when I laced up my boots, I'd be walking streets of gold. I would have shaved my face, maybe changed my shirt for this meeting with the Lord. If I'd have known this morning today would be my last, I'd have written you a letter. Honey, I can't make it back. Cry, my sweet angel, when you cry, remember our love has no goodbye. And my time came early, the orders couldn't wait. I've been posted here at Heaven's Gate. If I'd have known this morning I'd soon be laid to rest, I'd have stayed up all night long, picking my old guitar, hanging with my buddies, making memories for them to take home. But I didn't know this morning when we got the call, I'd be the first to fall. When you cry, my sweet angel, when you cry, remember, our love has no goodbye. And my time came early, but the orders couldn't wait. I've been posted here at Heaven's Gate. I know it's gonna hurt for a while. One day you'll think of me and smile. When you cry, my sweet angel, when you cry, remember our love has no goodbye. And my time came early, but the orders couldn't wait. I've been posted here at Heaven's Gate. Be okay. Knowing that you're safe makes it okay. I'll be watching over you night and day, yeah, hearing every word you pray.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's a good one.
Got some great applause out in the audience there, too. Awesome.
Lots of people out
here. Yeah. Thanks for listening, folks.
So what do you get creatively? Let's go back to the songs from the battlefield. I'm just so fascinated by this. I'm a history buff. I love Andersonville, that whole story, and Chickamauga. Yeah. What do you get creatively from physically beginning songs and kind of getting ideas in a battlefield or at a memorial or a military cemetery?
What do I get from it?
Yeah, I mean, does it? I mean, are you feeling? Are you feeling? I don't want to get creepy here, but like, are you feeling the ghosts? Yeah, or are you feeling?
No, it's not. It's not like I say. It's not about morbidity at all. It's just about, you know, there's so many stories. For example, I stopped in Clinton, Mississippi, on my way somewhere, and I stopped at a welcome center, and there was a statue there of two guys. One had a soldier over his, you know, one soldier was carrying his friend over his shoulder, and so I did some research. And these are two guys, they were kids, they grew up together in Clinton, Mississippi. They went through high school together, they joined the Marine Corps together, they were in the same platoon, they went to Korea together. They were behind enemy lines, they were hit by a mortar, I believe. One was killed instantly, the other guy was knocked unconscious for several hours. He came to, he picked up his friend, his best friend, on his shoulder, walked him back to the American lines, and then came home, and he himself was killed in a car accident 2 weeks later. Now those two guys are buried 7 feet apart. So to me, that was such a remarkable story. But everyone I've spoken to about this story, the general population, has never even heard of it. And I'm thinking to myself, what a crying shame that we have so many heroes in this country, and there's so many stories of heroism, and yet so few people are aware of that. So I've kind of made it my duty to inform as many people as I can about these little, I shouldn't use the word little, but there's so many smaller stories that have such a larger impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this, you know, so I've become the mouthpiece for the guys so that they never get forgotten.
Interesting. Well, you may have actually just answered this, but because I was going to ask you how hard is it to come up with new ideas when you're so focused on a certain topic, you know, veterans, how hard is it to come up with fresh things to write about when you're writing that many songs about it?
Well, you know, the thing is, I just don't care about the commercial value of it. I don't. So okay. I'm writing what I feel. And, okay. I found that when I get up on stage in front of veterans, and there are very many of them that come to all of my shows, we have an understanding because I've been in, I was a soldier, as you guys know, from my past. And so, you know, I've been where a lot of these guys have been, and so they have a deeper understanding and appreciation for somebody getting up there. That's as opposed to, and I'm not taking this away from any artists, but as opposed to just some big artist getting up there and singing about, you know, soldier songs, and they've never lived it, they've never experienced it, they've never seen it. It's I think there's just an authenticity there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
interesting. Yeah. I just know, I don't know if, have you been to the Stones? Is it Stones River, guys? The one in Murfreesboro, the Civil War battlefield?
I've never been there, no.
Because we've been there on Memorial Day many times, putting flags in, and it's always struck us how many of those markers, nobody knows what their name was, you know?
Mm. Right.
And that's always struck me as, you know, there's moms, wives, dads that have no idea where their spouse or kid ended up.
That's a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy not to have that kind of closure, you know?
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, you said, I heard you say before that you had a kind of an interesting, kind of a surprising response when this all started. You had written a song and you started playing it out, and then you started having a surprising response from vets. What was that song and what happened exactly?
That song's called John Roby, and the name is never mentioned in the song, actually. It's he was a good friend of mine. He's a very close friend of mine. I was getting ready to go into the Army. And so when I used to get home from boarding school, he'd spend some time with me and teach me a lot of stuff, you know, about, you know, tactics and how to strip and assemble a weapon. One night he was teaching me some stuff. And the very next morning I had to leave and go back to school. And at the end of our homework period at boarding school, they'd always play the evening news. 2 days later, at the end of homework, I'll never forget, the radio announcer said, Security Forces Headquarters regrets to inform you of the death in action of Patrol Officer John Roby. And there's a lot more to that story that I just don't have time to talk about on the air right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he was definitely my mentor and my closest friend at the time. So,
wow. So when you wrote a song about him and you started playing it out, what happened?
Oh, the veterans were crazy. They'd come up and they'd say, "I mean, that's my life. That's my life. You're singing about my life."
Wow.
You know. So it was just overwhelming.
Interesting that a story so specific about one person can have such universal appeal and people can see themselves in it.
Yeah, you know, we're taught as human beings not to, especially soldiers, we're almost, it's almost peer pressure not to talk about your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hold it in and you hold it in for years. And, you know, I have a friend of mine, his name's Timothy Bax, and he was a special forces operator in Rhodesia where I was. He's written a couple of great books and he's still involved in the special forces community. But he said something to me one day that was very interesting. He said he was giving a talk, and some high school kid said, "Have you ever been wounded in war?" And Tim's been shot 5 times in combat, different contacts with the enemy. But his response was, "Everybody who goes to war comes back wounded."
Mm.
And so you know, we need to be aware of that.
Wow, that's deep.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I know you do come to Nashville and you're hanging out with old writing buddies, John Wiggins, Dave Gibson, you know who over at my left shoulder here.
T.C. McPappy.
Mr. McPappy.
So even since 2013, the last time you were here, there have been so many changes in the business as far as how writers are paid in the digital age and all of that. What advice would you give a young writer just getting started in Music City today?
Run from publishers.
Would you like to elaborate on
I'm
that?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, yeah. I just put another nail in my coffin.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think a lot of songwriters they think that a publishing deal is validation of their talent. The truth is, it's your talent is yours, and you are already your own publisher. So, you know, do whatever you can. Get a third job before you go away and sign away your songs. That's just my opinion. Now, if you're an artist who's a writer artist, you know, then it may be better to go to a publisher. I'm not saying anything. I'm not taking anything away from publishers. I've just had some really, really bad experiences. So I don't want to sound bitter either. But I would just be very careful of your material and stop putting such an emphasis on having a publishing deal as validation of you being a professional songwriter.
Well, mm-hmm. Without getting into specifics, we don't want to do that. But what are the types of things that if you were to get with a publisher, you need to look out for? You know,
well, you can
advice
do
from your experience.
Do a single song agreement. Don't give them. In my opinion, don't give them a Schedule A. All the stuff that you've worked on. Give them do a single song agreement. And the first thing I'd ask a publisher is, what have you done lately? You know, how current are you? And you know, without being too aggressive about it, but you know, there's a lot of publishers out there that have never had cuts, and some haven't had cuts in 10 years.
Right.
Okay.
You know, so and once you lock in on that deal,
it's locked in.
It's done.
Yeah.
You know.
So don't spend a lot of time being dazzled by maybe the gold records, because those could have been from 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Not that that's not a value, but it's a completely different world now. I mean, they're looking for track guys, and you know, it's.
If I was a songwriter starting out, I would go with the first thing I'd concentrate on is the title. I would come up with a title where it's just so compelling that they have to listen to it, and then obviously, you know. People think once you've had a hit song or two that it's easier for you to get cuts, and so in some cases it's more difficult, you know.
Why is that?
Well, I just, you know, sometimes you get judged by who you write with, as far as birds of a feather stick together. So in other words, if I had a lot of cuts with Montgomery Gentry, well, there's some other artists out there that may not like their producer, or may have a problem with. I'm not saying, you know, exactly that's specific, But you know, you are judged by the company you keep. So if you get into a camp, sometimes you can alienate yourself from another artist because it's just two different camps.
I see.
So, I've had songs cut. Let me tell you, I've had songs cut, and literally on one occasion, picked the song out of the bottom of a trash can because it was listened to and thrown into a trash can in front of me.
Wow.
And I picked it up and I went somewhere else. And that song was Tequila Makes the Clothes Fall Off.
Wow.
So don't, okay, that's brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. We feel like we've learned something. Let's take a break.
I think so.
We're going to come back. We're going to get Gary to play one more song. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with Gary Hannon. Stick around. We'll be right back.
It's been a while since you and I turned up a beer to chase away the dust.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
For me, it's been too wild.
That's our guest Gary Hannon doing his tune, John Robbie, song we were just talking about a few minutes ago.
That's right.
That's a cool song. Speaking of, you mentioned that's somebody you knew from back in your growing up in South Africa. When you travel the world, even back when you go back to South Africa, what are some of the differences in how you see that a song is put together? I mean, are there differences versus the Music Row way and
craft-wise?
And, you know, when you go travel the world?
I don't think there's any country in the world that puts as much emphasis on, obviously, this kind of country music. I mean, there's a lot of great artists worldwide.
Sure.
Nashville, it's pretty deep, you know. There's a lot of talent in this town, you know. Yeah. And I mean, it's very competitive, and I think I think there's just so many great writers here. Obviously, there are writers, you know, overseas that are writing for themselves, but you know, sure. You get a lot of a lot of work done in a very short period of time in Nashville. I mean, you constantly, guys like Craig Wiseman are writing every single day for 20 years.
Yeah.
Just working, doing nothing else. And, you know, that's...
Well, he's got the 55 other companies that he has, too. He does a little bit with that, too.
When I say nothing else, he has people to take care of that.
Yeah.
Well, what you got for us? You going to play us one more?
You know what? I'm going to try a brand new one as well. Another one from the Songs from the Battlefield. I was with John Wiggins one day, and sitting in his house, and I looked up on the wall, and I saw two letters that were framed. And I said, "What is that, John?" And he said, "Well, that was my great 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 uncle, John Willoughby. He was in the Civil War, and he was killed in combat. Hmm. And there was a letter that he had written home." And I said, "Well, that's a pretty amazing story." And I said, "What about the other letter?" And he said, "Well, that was his uncle, Joseph Willoughby was his name. He was a preacher in the same battle, and he actually picked up his nephew's body." And took it all the way back to North Carolina for burial. So on my way back, you know, John and I started the song, and I, on my way, headed back down on my motorcycle trip towards Florida, I stopped in at the Battle of Chickamauga, and they'd had it all barricaded off. And I went and spoke to one of the park rangers, and he said, I told him what I was doing. And he said, "Man, just go in between the barricades. You're on a motorcycle. He says, just don't kill yourself, please. Go on down there and spend some time and do what you need to do." And that's what I did. So this song, it's another song, John Willoughby, that doesn't mention the name of the person in it, but that's the story behind this song.
All right.
Looks 31. His eyes were old, but his body died young. The damn Civil War of 63.
no place for a boy to be. Must have seen things that left him numb, 'cause his eyes were old when his body died young. I've read the letters he wrote home. He was scared to death, but he soldiered on. And all he left was his last name and this blood that's running in my veins. Joe was there that day, searching through the blue and gray. Barely recognized his own brother's son, 'cause his eyes were old when his body died young. I read the letters he wrote home. He was scared to death, but he soldiered on. And all he left was his last name and this blood that's running in my veins. So his picture's hanging on my wall, just a kid in a uniform. 17 looks 31. His eyes were old, but his body died young.
Thank you.
All right, we need to take one more break, and then we're going to come back with Gary's friend and our buddy. We're going to talk for a second about something he's done this year. But Gary, thanks so much for being here with us.
You're more than welcome, guys.
And
appreciate it.
Stick around. We'll be back with more on the Music Row Show.
I'm a kid with a guitar, trying to play Nuage. When they ask, where does your style come from? I know what you
mean. Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. Yes, that's Willie.
And Merle.
And Merle. He hadn't started singing yet, but Merle's in there too. That's a great tune called Django and Jimmy, which just happens to be the title cut of their brand new project, and just happens to have been written by a good pal of ours, Mr. Jeff Prince, who just stepped up to the mic just now.
Well, and first off, congratulations.
Thanks
on this.
Scott,
and the thing about this is I've been at Jeff's house to write and a couple of years back, and he's never had me back. But I went back there. I went there, and
he said you're going to bring pie.
That's right.
And he didn't
bring
pie.
I didn't bring pie. But all over his walls, it's framed records of Willie Nelson and Merle, and everything in his house is
and
all
Sean
about
Cassidy.
No Sean Cassidy.
Oh.
It's
that
just
was Gary Hannon's album.
Oh, that's right. That's the guest room. It's just everything in his house is all about Willie and Merle. And here, you've been in town for 25 years.
25 years, yeah.
And this is your first major cut.
Not the first one, but the most significant.
The most significant. Yeah. Okay, and it's a duet with Willie and Merle. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
Prince is here. And now we hear millions of times that we shouldn't write for a specific artist, just write. But in this case, it was an absolute specific write. Is that correct?
It was. You know, my first concert I ever went to, my dad took me to see Willie Nelson when I was 12. And the first record I ever bought when I was 13 with my lawn mowing money was Serving 90 Proof by Haggard. And so they're everybody's heroes, but they've been mine since I was a little kid. And about 2 years ago, I sat down by myself one week and I said, you know, I want to get a cut by my heroes. A lot of my buddies have had their heroes cut their songs. So I sat down looking for an idea, and I came up. I've read both of their books and every article in the world about them, and I went back to the roots and Django Reinhardt and Jimmy Rogers, and I dropped the last names, and all of a sudden I had a title called Django and Jimmy, which reminded me of Pancho and Lefty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I immediately, very quickly wrote the line, if there might not have been a Merle or a Willie if not for Django and Jimmy. And I wrote a little bit on it, and it kind of went in a file. And about a year and a half later, I called my good buddy Jimmy Melton, who's a terrific writer, very talented guy, and he's a huge fan of Merle and Willie's, and said, hey, you know, here's what I got so far. You want to come over and finish this with me? And he did. And so we wrote it specifically for them, not knowing they were going to do a duets record at all. And we wrote it in about 2 hours at my dining room table. We sung it into an iPhone on a work tape. No demo, just an iPhone work tape. And took it to our producer friend, Buddy Cannon, via several different ways. And and Buddy sent it to Merle and William. Within 3 days, they had heard it and loved it. And they'd cut it within, I think, 6 weeks of hearing it.
Nice.
And here we are.
That's the coolest story ever. I love that. Now, did you get a chance to meet him at any point along the way? Or
Yeah, Willie played the Ryman 2 nights in a row in March of this year, and I flew my dad up, who took me to see him when I was 12.
Yeah.
And thanks to Melanie Cannon, one of Buddy's daughters, she got me and Jimmy Milton and my father on the bus, so we hung out with Willie for a while, got pictures. I showed him a fan club card of mine that he signed when I was 14. I still have
it. Wow.
and then I went over to Cherokee, North Carolina. Haggard was playing a show at the casino over there, Harris, and my good buddy Dale Houston got me in there, and he's good friends with Merle, and we got on the bus and spent about 30 minutes talking with Merle. He was just fantastic. Wanted to know how I got the idea, how I wrote it. We had a really good time. They were very gracious to me, and it was, they're both very special moments.
Awesome.
Wow. Congratulations. That's so great. That is so great. And that kind of goes back. I know we're running out of time here, but you saving it for Jimmy Milton. One of the first things Gary told me years ago was, don't waste a good idea on a bad songwriter. And so you saved it till you had someone you wanted to write it with.
Well, ironically, I offered it to a couple people. And just the schedule never worked out, so it just remained there. And me and Jimmy Milton had never written a song before. This is the first song we ever wrote. And our second song we wrote a duet for Dolly and Loretta.
Okay.
And I already have confirmation that Dolly loves it, and we're hoping.
Oh my gosh.
We're hoping we get lucky with it. We're hoping.
Jeff Prince,
thanks so much. We've got another great hour of the show coming up. We've got the amazing Alyssa Bonagura is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. Woo-hoo. So come on back to the Music Row Show.
Nice.